of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Moeller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Moeller Program. An alarming research report is out indicating that 7 out of 10 Protestants aged 18 to 30 who go to church regularly in high school say they quit attending church by age 23. 34% of those said they had not returned even sporadically by age 30. The bottom line, this means about 1 in 4 Protestant young people have left the church. It's a pretty high statistic by the time you start looking at it. And the big question is, what explains what happens to so many young persons in their 20s, those who have been highly involved in church, have been church attenders during that time, and they simply fall away during the time between the beginning of college and the onset of their adult professional lives? That's a good question for us today. It's a good question for Christian parents. It's a good question for Christian churches, and it's a good question for the 20-something generation to try to figure out something of why this is happening and how we as Christians and as Christian churches should respond. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Lots of issues in the news. I published an article overnight at albertmoeller.com entitled, "Is This How the West Really Lost God?" It's based upon an article that was published in the Policy Review Journal by Mary Tashetti Eberstedt. And her argument's really fascinating. Let's just think about the underlying reality here for a moment, the relationship between two things. Number one, secularization. The process of secularization is what sociologists said was going to happen when technology and engineering and intelligence in terms of human engineering and the ability to create factories and dam rivers and, in other words, the technology of modernity would lead to a loss of faith in God. And the early sociologists were absolutely convinced of this, saying that as human beings gain more control of the universe, they'll have less need for God. And a process of the world becoming more secular will take place. Did it happen? Of course it did. Especially if you're looking at Europe. Not so much in the United States. Now, this doesn't talk about authentic Christianity. It's not a gauge of some kind of meter of how many persons are authentically believing Christians. It's just talking about how many people say they believe in God and how operational belief in God is in the society. That's fact number one. Fact number two, there have been experienced in the modern world two big phenomena. One is a big fundamental change in family structure, and the second is dramatic fall off in childbirth rates. Now, here's the deal. You put those two things together, and some of you out there may be saying, what does that have to do with each other? What do those have? It's secularization and radical changes in the family and falling birth rates. What do they have to do with each other? Well, the dominant theory is that as people no longer believe in God, as God no longer becomes an important part of the worldview of a society, people feel a license to start negotiating and revolutionizing and changing something like marriage, something like family structure. That makes sense. And then, given that same fact, they stop having the rates of children they had in the past because they no longer feel a divine mandate to have children. And thus birth rates fall and family structure is realigned. Marriage becomes an option. Sex becomes decoupled from marriage in a secularized society. You look at Europe and that's certainly true. But Mary Eberstedt is arguing that perhaps the theory is at least partially backwards. Maybe secularization, the loss of faith in God, has something to do with a prior change in family life. She marshals some evidence to indicate that the birth rates fell before the secularization in Europe, that indeed the changes in family life began before the falling rates of belief in God. So she's on to something. And I think this is where we as intelligent Christians should pay attention to this argument. Your family structure, your context really can determine, or at least influence to a large degree, your worldview. And the fact is that if you come from an intact family, you're more likely to be involved in church and more likely to believe in God than if you do not. That's just the bottom line. Intact families are more likely to go to church. They're more likely to stay in church. They're more likely to be heavily involved in church. So that has to have some impact on the worldview of the children from that kind of experience. There are other things, too. If you are, say, a young adult and you get married and stay married, and if you have kids and if you raise kids, statistically, by a long shot, you're more likely to say you believe in God than persons your same age who are unmarried or no longer stayed married or don't have children are likely to say. And I think there's some reasons for that, too. I think the experience of being married helps to reinforce an understanding of belief in God. I think also, especially, the experience of having children does the very same thing. Why should we be talking about this today? Why should an article that could be just lost among other obscure academic articles out there in the world have the Christian attention today? Because this is a good reminder to us that family structure is anything but incidental. That, for instance, when family structure is altered, even by divorce, this can actually drastically impact the spirituality and the spiritual experience and lives of children in those families. As the family goes, so goes the faith. It's actually too simplistic to say that, but maybe it's not completely far off the mark. Something we ought to watch. Anyway, you can read my article and think for yourself by going to albertmuller.com. You can link also to Mary Tashetti Eberstadt's article at Policy Review and see what you think. I think it's the right question. I think she's on to something of importance here. The phone number for our discussion coming later, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Other issues in the news include the fact that last night, six of the major Democratic presidential candidates did something historic. They stood together in a forum sponsored by the Human Rights Campaign, the first time that major presidential candidates have stood to argue an explicitly pro-gay rights forum and to answer questions going back and forth on how they would change the nation's policies related to the agenda of the homosexual movement. A couple of interesting things that happened there. In the course of that particular event, you had some interesting statements. A couple of them we're going to listen to. First of all, Senator Barack Obama spoke of himself, comparing himself and the homosexual community to feeling as outsiders.
When you're a black guy named Barack Obama, you know what it's like to be on the outside. And so my concern is continually to make sure that the rights that are conferred by the state are equal for all people.
Now, that raises an interesting question in itself. Barack Obama says he identifies as an outsider. Well, certainly. He is of a racial minority. Just given his international experience, he comes from a different background in that sense. His name sets him apart, perhaps, from an awful lot of his peers. But on the other hand, it's hard for someone who went to the Harvard Law School and was editor of the Harvard Review, Law Review, to be classified as an outsider. Similarly, when you're talking about the homosexual community in America, by and large, they are highly involved in major and elite businesses. They tend to be more educated than their non-homosexual neighbors. They tend to be, as their own marketing studies indicate, perhaps even wealthier and have more disposable cash than others. So we got to wonder about the insider-outsider kind of definition here, but that was a fascinating part in the discussion. Senator Hillary Clinton also responded. Now, the background to this is really interesting because the big dance that the Democratic candidates had to go through last night was to talk to a group of homosexuals who are ardently committed to same-sex marriage about why they have not gone so far as to affirm same-sex marriage. So what they have done, virtually all the candidates, and certainly the major candidates, that is Obama and Clinton and also former Senator John Edwards, is to suggest that what they want are civil partnerships that are equal. Now, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton is in even a little different situation than the other two because she's also running on a platform of reversing her husband's policy, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, put in effect in 1993. Let's listen to Senator Clinton.
You know, for me, we have made it very clear in our country that we believe in equality. How we get to full equality is the debate we're having. And I am absolutely in favor of civil unions with full equality.
Okay. That's the dance right there. At another point in the debate, she said, I don't really want to talk about same-sex marriage. I want to talk about why I support, you know, civil unions. Well, that's just not what the homosexual community wants to talk about. And here's their argument. Let's just assume for a moment that that we're understanding the logic of the gay rights movement. They're saying that separate but equal simply won't work. And they directed that very question to Senator Obama, assuming that he would have a special historic context out of which to answer that question. We'll be tracking that with you. I think the most interesting point in that debate last night came when Senator John Edwards said he was wrong to have said in an earlier debate that he opposes same-sex marriage because of his religion. But when he was asked what then was the ground of his opposition to same-sex marriage, he didn't have an answer. And matter of fact, he didn't answer the question at all. That, to me, is bizarre. Earlier, the senator himself had said that the reason he opposes same-sex marriage is because of his faith. Now he says, no, I was wrong, that isn't it. So what is it? No answer. This is just going to get more interesting as we go along. Why do so many 20-somethings leave church, and why do so many not come back? The phone number 877-893-8255. We'll get to your calls when we come back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The research results are pretty sobering, indicating that a significant number of evangelical young people leave the church during their formative early adult years, especially from the onset of college until their age 30. They're leaving church. In some cases, as many as 7 out of 10, between 70 and 80% are simply leaving church, no longer attend church during the years from 18 to 30. Now, there is good news. A large number of them do come back, but not about 1 in 4. Between 25 and 35% never come back. That's a significant loss for evangelical Christianity. This is not just about evangelicals. The study here is about Protestants, but we'll include evangelicals within that, of course. And the big question is, why does this happen? Now, before we get to kind of breastfeeding and wondering why there are so many who are leaving and not coming back now, we do need to recognize that life cycle issues have always been a part of human experience, that there's been something about early adulthood, and, you know, you don't have to be a psychologist or a counselor to know that there are some issues going on in terms of adult identity during those years, and people are deciding, I had to go to church, my parents took me, do I have to go now? And a lot of kids at that age or young adults are experimenting with different choices on their own. But the big question is, why do so many of them not come back? And what are we doing wrong, if we're doing anything wrong, during the time that you have these kids, when they are kids, in church? And perhaps what is the church doing wrong in terms of reaching out to 20-somethings now? How can families, churches, and Christians respond to this? The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. From Tarpon Springs, Florida, Tony's on the line, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Tony.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yeah, I believe that these young people are disenfranchised because these churches are being run like businesses now, and the focus is on the growth of the church outwardly, and on the church programs rather than on individual spirituality, and more importantly, on teaching these people to love God with all their heart, mind, strength, and soul, and to love their neighbor as themselves. That's what's important. That's what they need to do to get through life on a daily basis, and that's not being taught in these churches.
Okay, Tony, let me press you just a little bit on this. Do you think the problem is the youth ministry in a lot of these churches? I hear that criticism from time to time.
You know, I think it starts right at the top because there's so much pressure to, be the greatest church and the one that has the most people in the pews and it comes from the top, and then they lose focus of really what the whole church is about, and that is for us to give ourselves to Christ and to love Him unconditionally, just as He has loved us, and that's what we need to defeat the things that face us every day and to deal with the evils that assail us and with our own depraved hearts,
yeah.
Which take over.
Tony, appreciate that word. Let's just think about that for just a moment. There's obviously something going on when you have very, very superficial Christianity packaged as the real thing, when it's not the real thing. And then what happens is that you have young people who think they're Christians when they're not, or they think they know what Christianity is and they've actually never seen it. And that is one of the critiques of evangelicalism in terms of its thinness, you might say. It's just thin. And that kind of thin faith, rather than thick faith and thick belief, just doesn't last. And that's part of what's going on. Put simply, if you don't ground these young people deeply in biblical truth and give them a passionate understanding of Christianity, and if they are converted and come to faith in Christ, ground them deeply in the disciplines of the Christian life, they are likely to fall away, either by confusion or by distraction or by seduction of the larger world. That's a good biblical warning, that that we are given very much in the words of Scripture. Let's go to Barnstown, Kentucky, where William's on the line. Go ahead, William.
Yes, I would just like to comment that the what the last gentleman said about the church, and I think we like to blame the church a little bit too much. And as parents, they don't take the responsibility of being true parents to these children. I know a lot of them bring their youth to church and then they go home, and or they'll bring them to Sunday school and not stay for service. I think it goes back to the parents. You know, if you got godly parents, they reinforce these children when they get home with what the Word of God says that they learn in church. But if you don't reinforce these children with the Word of God, then they go off to college and they're more apt to fall into the snares of Satan.
Yeah. No, William, two good things that you pointed out there. In fact, I want to amplify what you said, not to argue with you, but to take your argument one step further. I don't believe that what is learned at church should be reinforced at home, so much as I believe that what should be learned at home should be reinforced at church. In other words, according to Deuteronomy chapter 6, parents are the primary educators of our children. Now, certainly in terms of the preaching ministry of the church, which is absolutely fundamental, the central mark of the church, according to the New Testament and according to the Reformers, that's where a lot of what the preached word should be reinforced at home, but we shouldn't outsource this Christian education to the church in any form, whether it be youth ministry or Sunday school or anything else. Yes, I want to have my kids involved in that, but I don't want to assume that means that I don't have the responsibility to teach my own children. And the other thing you said, William, that was very important is at the end where you talked about the college context and you talked about basically the seduction of worldviews and ideas that can lead many people, young people, away from the church. And I want to say that college is a big part of that experience, certainly more at the intellectual level, but at the peer level, you don't have to go to college to have that experience, where there are incredible seductions of young people away from faith in Christ, away from, just to put it in the terms of this research, church attendance. Thanks so much for your call, William. In Brookville, Ohio, Gail's on the line, listening on XM 170. Go ahead, Gail.
Yes, I believe that the church historically has done an awful job of perpetuating the puritanical view of children are to be seen and not heard. And I think that we perpetuate it by getting kids out of the main services. We push them off into children's ministry. We push them off into youth ministry. And then we wonder why they don't want to be engaged with us once they become adult or college age. And I think we create separation and then we perpetuate it, and we can't figure out why they're not engaged and involved in ministry, and we've not done a job of involving them or engaging them both in an actual worship service, in teaching them to pray and letting them pray with us when ministry occurs. I think that we miss all the opportunities because we create that division and then we sustain the division and can't figure out why they don't want any part of it.
You want to go on anymore, Gail? I mean, you're on a roll. That's a very good argument. And, yeah, as a matter of fact, you're sounding a theme that I return to often myself. There is an infantilization of adolescents in the church. We treat them as if they're mere spectators, as if we're there to entertain them, and we're just concerned to keep them happy instead of involving them deeply in the life of the church. Now, let me just say, you have the right problem, at least one of the right problems identified. Let me just put as a footnote here, you have the wrong villains. The Puritans actually didn't believe that children were to be seen and not heard. They believed that children were to be taught. And so I won't go into an extended defense of the Puritans here, other than to say that I think they would agree with you immediately about the need to engage young people in leadership in the church. And by that, we mean young Christians, young believers in Christ. I have mentioned a couple times on this program how moved I was when I was visiting with the Covenant Life Church in Gaithersburg, Maryland several years ago, and they had some teenage boys, young men, who were clearly involved in worship in the church, not just in terms of music, some of them were there, but one young man who was going to be leading the congregation in prayer, you know? We've got to make sure in the church we do not join in this extending of adolescence and delay of adulthood. We need to help these young men move into leadership in the church and young people be engaged in the church in so many different levels. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Why are so many 20-somethings and young adults leaving church and not coming back? We'll be right back with your calls.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The question is, why do so many young adults leave church, and why do so many of them not come back? That's a question that's being asked by a lot of churches, and yet, I'm afraid, not by enough churches. I'm afraid that a lot of churches just think, as long as there are enough people coming in the front door, they're not going to be too concerned with all those leaving through the back door. I don't think that's a responsible understanding of Christianity. It's not a responsible understanding of conversion. It's not a responsible understanding of baptism. It's not a responsible understanding of church. And for that reason, I think we really need to be looking carefully at all this. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I believe in youth ministry. I believe in college ministry. But I think the over-segregation of those age components from the life of the church is very dangerous. I think that families aren't taking this seriously enough. I think that they are satisfied that so long as their teenagers are in church and out of jail and not getting someone pregnant, that they're probably doing okay. And then they don't understand what happens when they go to college and they just leave church and don't come back. They never really had a serious understanding of the faith, and they may never have actually responded in faith to the gospel. And regardless of the fact that they may have gone to retreat and had a great experience, they may have been highly involved and loved the youth group, all of a sudden they just disappear. I think the other issue, and I want to throw this out, I think this may be the single most important issue. If someone asked me, I've got an 18-year-old, as by the way I do, going off to college, as I do, you know, I've been saying this for years, what's the most important thing? The most important issue is not the college they attend. It's the church in which they do or do not become involved in their new college community. I think the single most important issue to me is where is my child going to be deeply involved in the life of a congregation, in the fellowship of fellow Christians during the college experience? I think that is of vital importance. One of the reasons why we need to really pray for solid biblical evangelical churches adjacent to college and university campuses. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Let's go to Tom calling from Hanson, Kentucky. Go ahead, Tom.
Dr. Mohler.
Yes, sir.
2 years ago, we're privileged to attend the American Association of Christian Counselors meeting in Nashville, and we heard George Barna, and he very passionately talked about the children's ministry as being the most important ministry in the entire church, and we need to do a better job of grounding the children in the spiritual fundamentals, and that would go a long way toward improving the problem that you're addressing today.
Well, I certainly want to affirm the need to teach children. I don't want to suggest that only the church as a congregational entity has that responsibility, you know, in terms of its formal program. I want to turn back to parents and say, you better take the lead on this as parents and teach your children. But no, I agree that we have the desperate need to actually teach solid content to children, not just entertain them, not just keep them busy, not just keep them out of trouble, not just give them glue and paste and let them play. Not just to take them outside and give them Kool-Aid and cookies, but instead get them grounded in serious study of the Bible and of the truths of the Christian faith. Tom, I appreciate your point, and I appreciate your call. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. There are very important student ministries on so many campuses. You've got Campus Crusade. You have the InterVarsity groups, denominational groups such as you have the Baptist Student Union. You have Reformed University Fellowship. You've got all kinds of groups like that. Campus by campus, some are stronger, some are weaker. You need to look very carefully. It's good for kids, especially at the college level, to get involved in these things. But again, they don't replace the local church. The parachurch is not a replacement for the local church. Let's go to Greg calling from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I just like to make a comment. I believe that a lot of the problem with our kids in church is the fact that fathers refuse to get involved. Our young men, especially teenage boys, see church as something for women and kids because all they see is mom taking kids to church. Dad's not involved.
I think that's a very, very good point, and I wish that I had some statistics from this study about whether there's a difference between young men and young women in this particular pattern. I'm not sure that there is. But I'm sure you're right, Greg. I'm absolutely sure you're right. The failure in one generation of males is almost always traceable to a failure in the previous generation of males. Which is to say, a problem in sons is likely to be traceable to a problem in fathers. Of course, the biggest problem we have is the one you identify, and that's absent fathers. In society, we know what it looks like, but also in the church. And that doesn't mean in the church that the kid doesn't have a biological father. It means that he's not a faithful Christian demonstrating and showing by his life what active commitment to Christ looks like, what deep commitment and involvement in the church looks like. And yeah, young men have a lot of things they can do other than go to church and give themselves to the disciplines of the Christian life. If they don't, we need to know why. We'll be right back. Welcome back. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Nikki is calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Nikki.
Yes, my perspective is a little bit different than some of your other callers. I'm 28, and I was blessed to grow up in a wonderful church and, you know, feel like I have a great background. I did go away to college, tried the campus ministry, felt more like a big party than church, which is what I really was looking for. So for the last 8-10 years, I've been away and really have tried the last couple of years to find a church. And I have to say, I just have been uncomfortable everywhere I've been. I've tried so hard, and it seems like, you know, every place is a social gathering, or it's more about reaching out to a certain lifestyle to bring groups in. And I just really want a solid Bible-based church. And it just seems like it's changed over the last few years.
Well, there's no doubt that an awful lot of churches seem to be less Bible-based than they ought to be, and they are. There's a real lack of expository preaching and that kind of expository and preaching seriousness in a lot of churches. But, Nikki, I just want to suggest to you that you got to be real careful. I want to ask you to do a heart check about whether you really are looking fairly at these churches. And understand, don't look for the perfect church. It doesn't exist. That's not to say you're not right in your prophetic concerns about some of these churches, but you need to get deeply involved in one of these churches simply because that is Christ's command to his church. We need to be deeply involved in the life of a congregation and be a force for encouraging the right things. But we desperately need that accountability of being in the local church. So I would just encourage you not to give up your concerns for expository preaching and serious approaches to doctrine and all the rest. Far be it. Those are two of my passionate concerns. But just understand that the church, and that means, by the way, you can't join a liberal church. You can't join a church that repudiates the gospel. You can't join a church that has embraced theological error. But find a church that believes itself very much committed to the scripture, and perhaps help some folks to understand that it should be deeper than that. And encourage the saints as you go along. Maybe the way you need to be encouraged is by getting deeply involved in a local church where you encourage others to do all that Christ has commanded. So, Nikki, I appreciate your call. Good perspective from a 20-something, and I appreciate hearing from you. Let's go to Tom calling from Washington Courthouse, Ohio. Go ahead, Tom.
Dr. Mueller, I'm a minister of students in Ohio, and one of the things I've found, maybe just a bit of encouragement for maybe pastors who are listening or youth pastors, is the constant battle to try to get teenagers involved in something other than just a high level of entertainment or a big conference type atmosphere is to create a packet and to be able to go into the homes. And because I think a lot of parents don't really understand, you know, even like the Ephesians 5 setup of they're the pastor of the home. And I think just through some leadership at our church and some things like that is to be able to sit down with a parent in their house and look at them in the eye and say, you know, your responsibility to your children, to your teenagers, is great. And I was never taught that. And I'm not a youth pastor, youth ministry major. I'm a philosophy major at Cedarville University. And so my path is a little different. But that has been something to where the parents, we look at each other in the eye and we say, this is what I'm doing. And all I can do is partner with you. I can't make you do this.
You know, I really appreciate that point, Tom. In fact, at so many different levels, and you know, confronting parents with their responsibilities, kind of a strange thing, isn't it, that we in the church have to do that? But then again, that's what the church is for, to encourage one another unto faithfulness. And you know, in many cases, what you have is the reaping of seed sown in previous generations. The rise of the American high school had a massive impact on the experience of American adolescents, taking them away from the home, putting them into this particular accumulation, you might say, a concentration of just an adolescent peer-directed environment. And a lot of churches just responded to that by creating something like a high school within the seminary, within the church, to within the congregation, just segregating these kids away again, making teenagers like a separate species. And parents just kind of disengaged, and a lot of parents, so they didn't know what to do with them. So a lot of the parents you're meeting with, Tom, are frankly ill-equipped. And I appreciate what you said. No one told you this before. A lot of them have no idea that that's really their responsibility, and that's to the shame of the church. Tom, I hope you're still with me. I want to ask you a question because you're also a university student yourself. When you look at the peer group in your church where you grew up, how many of them would you say are now actively involved in a local church, and how many are not? In other words, is this problem overblown, or is this something you're actually seeing in your own generation?
Well, it's definitely something I'm seeing in my generation. I'm a little older. I'm 34, and I didn't grow up in the church. But all my friends, a lot of my friends coming up through high school, even went to a local, you know, a Christian school where their parents were heavily involved in church, aren't anymore. Or they've had to go through some really rough times to even get back in just to attendance. I think it's right on. I didn't listen earlier on in the radio station here, but I pulled something up from USA Today. Maybe that's what you were talking about.
Absolutely.
Saying about the large dropout rate from high school to college. They might be going to college, but they're out of the church.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. The article is, as reported in USA Today, by Kathy Lynn Grossman, a very, very fine religion reporter with USA Today. But the study was undertaken by Lifeway Research. Lifeway Christian Resources is the publishing arm of the Southern Baptist Convention. Lifeway Research is their think tank and research division. This particular survey, by the way, was undertaken of 1,023 Protestants, and that means they identified themselves in this kind of survey, as Protestants aged 18 to 30. And, of course, that covers a wide spectrum, everything from liberal Protestantism to evangelicalism. So there needs to be more research. For instance, is it any different among evangelical churches than among others? That would be a key question. Now, you also have people who are trying to argue that the church simply isn't the solution. And that's one of my frustrations. The name George Barna has come up here, in that I think he has a very reckless disregard for the centrality of the local church in the purposes of Christ. I think I want to come back and say that I believe that the most important way to recover this generation or any generation is to recover the local church as the local church, for the local church to be faithful, demonstrating all the marks, fulfilling all the ministries, receiving its commission, and creating true Christian community and authentic Christian community in the congregational context. I don't think anything can replace that. I don't think any parachurch, in fact, as I say, I don't think, I'm absolutely certain no parachurch organization, no matter how faithful, can replace the local church. Does that mean I'm against the parachurch organizations? Well, in some sense, their judgment on the local church and its failure. But there is a need for some of these ministries also with particular focus that can help churches to be more faithful. Not replace the church, but perhaps help the church to be more faithful. Back with some final thoughts in just a moment. Good conversation on why so many 20-somethings leave church and why so few of them are coming back. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Here on the campus of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary Boys College, we're welcoming new students by the hundreds, well over 1,000 of them, and that's a fascinating and humbling experience. So I'm just getting ready to go in just a bit to a fellowship welcoming the graduate students and later the college students, and I'm looking at this in a whole new way as my wife and I are getting ready to take our oldest to college. Kind of a good time to talk about the topic of our discussion today. And yet, a better time, perhaps even, to look at children who are younger. You know, I would just encourage you. Some of you right now are getting ready to go home. Some of you are home, getting ready to have dinner. Some of you are looking forward to the weekend with your family. I want to ask you to look at your 4-year-olds, look at your 12-year-olds, look at your 15-year-olds, and recognize time is short. Let me just promise you, you've heard it before, but it's absolutely true. Before you know it, they're going to be going off to college. And so what you can do between now and then is absolutely crucial, what you must do, the stewardship of that time. And so I would just encourage you that way. But let's say you are right now looking at an 18-year-old who is fast packing boxes ready to go off to college. And not only 18, maybe even some 17-year-olds and others, they get ready to go off. And you're just wondering, what can I do? As Christian parents, let me suggest a couple of very concrete things. Number one, know exactly what they're getting into. And help them to think through what they're going to be facing. Help them to understand that they're going to find that there are an awful lot of smart people who aren't Christians. That there are an awful lot of sophisticated people who aren't Christians. That the university culture attracts an awful lot of people who are very attractive and they're hardly committed to the Christian worldview. Some of them openly antipathetic, opposed to, condescending toward the Christian worldview. You need to prepare your kids for the fact they're going to face opposition. They're going to face the seduction of alternative worldviews, alternative lifestyles, and all the rest. Understand that for the first time, when they're not living in your home, there is the sweet taste of freedom. And you help them to think through the appropriate boundaries for exercising that freedom. In terms of their spiritual lives, of course, pray for them. Hopefully you've been praying for them since before they were born. But then take an active role in helping them very quickly to get involved in a very faithful local church. We need churches around colleges and universities to feel a particular calling to help involve these young Christians and young people in authentic Christian community, confronting them with authentic Christian preaching, the authentic preaching of the gospel, and the disciplines of the Christian life, discipline of the church, mutual accountability. The peer issue is so important, not just for adolescents, not just for college students. Let's face it, for all of us, it's very important to get them in a peer context so they're going to be reinforced in the faith, not have the faith denigrated and the disciplines of the Christian life completely disregarded. We'll be back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Albert Moeller.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.